How have you not seen this?
Have you not seen this? As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today I am joined by Lauren Benkaz.
Hello.
And Satoyo.
Hi.
And we just watched George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead, made in 1968, very low budget, black and white, and it's very much a very important film as far as the genre of zombies is concerned. A lot of issues brought up in the movie, primarily some questions of race. That are dealt with very effectively. In addition, it's like zombies wouldn't be everywhere right now if it weren't for this movie. I think we could safely say that they would certainly not be as prominent in popular culture right now as they are. Definitely. So, very important movie. Lauren, how have you not seen this?
I don't know, but after seeing it, I know that I've been missing out.
Okay.
Which, I mean, because I like zombie movies. I've really grown to like them in the last, like, couple years, so I should have seen it.
Yeah, absolutely. Satoyo?
I saw it once as a child. I think it was about 6 years old. And I remember, like, when we talked about seeing this thing, and I was like, I know I saw that when I was a kid, but I didn't remember. But I knew there was a reason why I had sort of blanked it out of my memory.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I saw the main character, it all came flooding back, and I'm like, okay, I remember everything now, and that's why. Even as a child, I remember seeing the film, thinking, like, this is kind of interesting, not really getting it, but the ending, I was like, no!
Yeah,
it gave me that type of feeling, and I was like, ah! And now, as a 30-year-old man, I see it, and I'm like, no! Come on! And like, so, yeah.
I have the same feeling, so I was like, ah!
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, absolutely, we'll get to that. Let's start a little earlier, I guess. Well, first off, what did you guys think of the movie?
I thought it was really good, and I guess I haven't seen a lot of movies from that time, but it seemed to be really progressive.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Not necessarily, for the genre, but also just for filmmaking for the time, and then also, like, you were talking about some race issues, and then also...
Yeah, certainly.
Like, the... Barbara, one of the main female characters, she seemed to also, at the beginning at least, like,
yeah.
It seemed to have stronger female characters than typical
before she descends into just being completely worthless.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely, that film, I mean, you can understand why people call it a classic. Like, it definitely actually is a classic. It's incredibly progressive in terms of literally just for filmmaking in general, not just for zombie films, you know, like when they were outside of the White House talking to scientists, like the conversation, the dialogue was so incredibly important, especially when you saw like the sheriff department and these political figures, the dialogue was very, very engaging, and the newscasters was all very, very progressive, stuff that we now see. And we're like, when we watch a movie and that movie cuts to something on CNN, and we're like, oh, look, CNN's in this movie. Like, it came from movies like this.
Yeah.
And then it did. It had a lot of race issues that were being addressed, both positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of gender issues that were being addressed, mostly negative. A female feminist would hate the way women are portrayed in this film. There's not too much to like. It starts off really, really well, and then, you know, catatonic worthlessness. At least from the title female character.
Yeah. You know. Barbara, I think that's an interesting point. I think that's a realistic tack, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Because, realistically, out of all of these characters, Ben seems to be the only productive one.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper is just a thorn in everyone's
side.
Like, it's just, like, even his wife is tired of his bullshit in this movie.
Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she's just sick of it.
Johnny's well-meaning, but kind of dense.
Right.
Yeah.
He's stupid.
Yeah, he's kind of
dumb. He's a goofball.
Yeah.
I think Barbara's, like, she definitely, her survival instinct kicks in at the very beginning of the film. she manages to escape and to secure herself. And then once Ben shows up, like, she kind of descends after she, like, tells him. Because he has that great fucking speech, that monologue, about the diner, like, the truck crashing into it, like, and him, like, his escape, like, how he came to be at the farmhouse. And then it cuts to hers, and, like, she's, like, even just the way she's relaying her story, like, you can tell, like, it's just now starting to kind of sink in with her. And that's the point where she kind of just relinquishes her faculties. And it, like, just starts babbling later. She's like, oh, Johnny has the keys. Like, this has nothing to do with anything, Barbara.
Yeah, and then she only gets it back at the tail end when it's too late for her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She only really... And she forces herself to snap out of it when it's too late.
Yeah.
You know? Barbara kind of... This is just a random side note. Barbara kind of does what I do when I'm driving. If nobody's there, then I take charge. But if I have somebody else in the car, I'm like, where am I going?
Yeah, what am I doing?
And I just, like, let them tell me the directions.
Like, then you're at the wheel.
Right, and, so I think, she was just like, somebody else is here, and they're okay with being in charge. But, it went back to her being a helpless woman.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is, like, because this movie, not the first zombie movie by any stretch, but it's definitely the first zombie movie of its kind, in terms of, like, where zombies are placed. It's an outbreak, it's a potential apocalyptic scenario, and we can sit here and say all these things, like, oh, Barbara should have done this, but then, like, what would we do in this situation? Now, we have Night of the Living Dead, like, we have decades of, like, seeing zombie movies and everything, but, like, this, for the time it came out, like, people around this time would have seen that, and they wouldn't have known what the fuck they were dealing with.
Right.
I think that's why, I think you're absolutely right. It's very, very appropriate for the time, given that this is the 60s. And I think, actually, that's probably kind of why the Ben character thrives, actually. Realistically, because from a social perspective, he's doing the worst.
From a
social perspective, you know, because he's a black man, his character has been doing the worst.
Yeah.
So he's used to things always not necessarily going his way in a very weird way. And realistically, you know, he's used to lynchings were still happening during this time. People were getting away with it. So to him, it's like, okay, shit's actually hitting the fan. This is really bad, but it's just a really bad Tuesday.
Yeah,
that's how I kind of felt like he was treating it.
This is a normal day, but now there are zombies.
Exactly, but now there are zombies. People are always trying to kill me. Let's be clear. Like, people are always trying to kill me.
Yeah.
How am I going to get through this? How am I going to figure this out? I have no choice. I do not have the choice to relinquish, you know, my faculties to anyone else. Because I've never been given that option before.
That's a really good point. Because, like, Barbara probably hasn't faced as much adversity as Ben.
Probably none.
I mean, her brother was, her older brother was there.
Johnny seemed like they were doing okay. What's a bad day for them? Oh, we don't have any more candy in the car.
We don't have any more candy. We drove 3 hours outside of the
way. To drop off a reaper headstone.
You know, whereas Ben's like, I'm like a semi-skilled worker. I'm incredibly educated, but I don't have the resources to be educated. I can't drink at the same water
fountain. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, I can't,
Barbara. I don't feel too sorry with your upper white middle class woes. Right.
And I think that's actually a very, very progressive thing if you really look at what Romero did with this character. This is coming off of the heels of Martin Luther King's assassination, Malcolm X being assassinated 3 years before, Fred Hampton, the Black Panther leader in Chicago, being assassinated.
Yeah.
And much that ending scene, actually, to me, was like a Fred Hampton.
Harkens
back to, like, COINTELPRO and everything like that. So you're seeing these images of competent men who are not white. I think that's competent, very capable men who are not white. Interestingly enough, everyone around them is trying to undermine them.
The tension between Ben and Cooper.
Yes.
Like, I think that's very, it's like 10 to 1. If that had been a white guy, like, Cooper might have butted heads with him, but certainly not to the extent that he did.
Cooper would have recognized him as sort of an alpha that actually wants to get stuff done.
Yeah.
Whereas Ben, he's so easy to undermine, and I hate to sort of bring it back to now. Like, it's That's why, regardless of how you feel about the current president, he is so easy to undermine.
Yeah.
Every single thing he does. I mean, I've never seen such rage and vitriol from people.
Oh, certainly.
We've had Democratic president. We've had a Clinton and all these other things.
Yeah.
We've never seen such vitriol.
But, yeah, and even when not, like, you guys know, like, he's doing some of the same bullshit yes. George Bush did,
the,
right?
Yes.
Why were you saying this during the Bush administration?
He took us into another, he's taking us into another war like Bush did. You guys had nothing to say.
Exactly.
Bush saluted the soldiers while holding a dog, and it was just as shitty, and you guys said nothing.
Yeah, but because a black dude did it.
Yeah, it's
and it's fucked.
Yes. So I think that Romero actually touched on this, and I read the casting notes, and Romero was like, "Well, yeah, it was he's a black guy, but interestingly enough, he gave the best audition."
Exactly. Yeah.
He's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
He gave the best
it
audition.
It wasn't meant to. Yeah, yeah. It was just whoever got the role.
Yeah.
And Dwayne Whitaker knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. And so I think as a result that I think Romero knew, like, "Oh, I've got gold here."
Yeah,
I really do.
And
have
like Romero, like even after the casting, like he wasn't super gunning for a lot of the racial stuff.
Yeah.
It just ended up happening that way, and that's kind of how it's been read since it came out.
Yeah,
I think some of the best are. I guess what I'm trying. This is a completely dumb comment, but like it seems like in some of the films that are like critically acclaimed, it's like the casting never goes as planned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it works out for the best, but
yeah, absolutely.
I'm still waking up from a nap.
No,
but oh, yeah, one thing that I did want to mention, it seemed interesting that after Ben took charge, then when anybody would try to talk to Barbara,
mm-hmm.
he'd be like, "No, you don't talk to her."
Yeah,
well, it's like he took ownership over Barbara.
Well, I don't think it was an ownership thing. I think it was that he knew the state of mind and he felt obligated to her. Like, he was trying to look out for her.
He knew she was terribly, terribly broken.
Yeah.
By the point that he had encountered her, he sort of knew, and he went into, like, sort of protection mode. And also, I think when she finally broke and they had that little physical tussle and he kind of like knocked her out,
yeah.
You know, I don't think he particularly felt good about that.
Yeah,
no.
But the tension was so high, so I think he felt obligated to her.
Yeah.
But I think it's weird, like, the whole relationship building, because it didn't seem like he felt obligated to
mm-hmm.
anybody else, and he just met her.
Yeah, because no one else was as particularly broken as she was.
Oh, yeah. Well,
no one was
so
almost as, like, as worthless.
He didn't sock anyone else
yes.
in the jaw.
He didn't sock, yeah. If you've never seen, there's this scene where Barbara loses it. She is coming undone, you know, and she's trying to get back to her brother. Brother's out, brother's dead, brother's done.
Yeah.
And he's like, "No, that's not safe." And she's being very forceful, making a lot of noise, and she smacks him.
Mm-hmm.
And he cold cocks her.
he just to
set it right, you know, just to set. And she goes unconscious, and he lays her on the couch and does all that. He feels bad about it, gets her some new pair of shoes and everything.
Yeah, that is.
But
kind
he
of
under,
funny.
Yeah, but he does. He sort of understands, like, she can't defend herself.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
She actually cannot defend herself. Everyone else actually in this has someone.
Yeah.
The Coopers have, like, everyone has someone. Johnny
yeah.
and
Tom
and
has
it,
Judy.
Yeah.
Judy's the girlfriend.
Everyone has someone. She's got no one. And in reality, I've got no one. So it's like, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because, like, when he does step up, it's when Cooper's antagonizing
mm-hmm.
her.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and that's the, in this movie, there are two people who are very actively battling for control, and it's Cooper and it's Ben.
Yeah.
Everyone else is just, like, kind of very much fall in line, and
mm-hmm.
when you tell them to jump, it's how high.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting, that dynamic.
Yeah.
And Cooper, like, not even willing to listen to reason. Like, he just... And his, I think his wife even says something to the effect is like, "You have to be right."
Yes,
right.
The worst type of man, the coward
yeah.
who must always be right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, while watching that film, I was like, and his wife is this actually very level-headed individual.
Yeah,
pretty,
she realizes that the marriage was
yes,
a bad idea.
Yeah, she. Oh, yeah. Oh, she's like, "Oh, why did I ever let him come in me? Why did I ever let this? Why did I ever let this happen?" But he's one of those, like, very, you know, underlying some xenophobia, you know, racism thing, but more than anything else, just a self-aggrandizing coward.
Yeah.
he's terrified, as is everyone else, but he's almost terrified in a way that Barbara is. He's just able to be vocal.
Yeah.
But he's almost completely
proactive.
Yeah, he's a little bit more proactive, but still paralyzed by how scared he is.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I lost my train of thought. I blanked. I think some of the other interesting things also... one of the reasons I love this movie so much is because it's black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Romero followed up with Dawn of the Dead, his movies were in color from that point on. This was black and white, I think largely out of necessity.
Yes.
For the production budget.
Yep.
And it looks like these are the best looking zombies because, like, when you throw color in the mix,
that's true.
It can get kind of ridiculous, but it really works with the black and white. Like,
yeah.
You really don't need the color to see fingers get chopped off or someone, you know, eat a hand.
Exactly.
It does
like,
it by itself.
And the makeup's, like, not even super grotesque for him. And it doesn't
have to
be. But, like, you look at more modern zombie films, you look at, like, a show like The Walking Dead, and now it's like, oh, how gross can we make these? Like, and that's very much what it's about, and that's fine, but I definitely it's part of the Walking Dead comics are in black and white.
Yes.
Creator Robert Kirkman, actually, he said, he's like, I don't want to do color because I think zombies look like shit in color.
Yeah.
I think even, like, again, I know it was, like, a budget choice, but I think the black and white then makes you focus more on the story.
Yes.
Exactly.
And not
yes.
necessarily the action.
Yes.
Yeah,
and,
certainly.
Everything actually does become that much more effective because you're not relying on the color to do this. You can do it for yourself, realistically.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's like old Hitchcock things. He didn't have to show you all the gore, but you knew.
No.
He didn't have to just
like
ram
that shower
it.
Scene in Psycho.
Yeah, in Psycho. He doesn't have to ram it down your throat.
It's just implied.
Exactly. It's implied, this is awful. You know, and as a result, any of the violence that does happen in Night of the Living Dead is so incredibly effective.
Yeah.
So incredible. Even though it doesn't have to be, like, the most state-of-the-art stuff, I'm just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, goodness. And at the same time, it's like, ooh, this is chilling because that's a character who is dead. And I don't necessarily see the zombie that's doing this. They don't have a jaw missing or anything like that. Like,
yeah.
Also, I love, too, this movie does what an entire season of The Walking Dead failed to do, which was make being stuck pretty much in one location interesting.
Yes.
I like every single, there's a good 10-minute chunk where there's no dialogue.
Yeah.
It's just Ben and Barbara, like, fortifying the house.
Yep.
Like, it's just all score and, like, them checking periodically. And it doesn't... At no point was I like, God, is this scene so long? I was like, no. Like, everything here
this.
Is advancing the story. Like, everything here is progressing the plot.
Yeah.
It's not, oh, let's watch Daryl sit in the woods with his crossbow and hallucinate.
Right, and hallucinate and then dream about his brother.
Yeah,
and
it's like, no. It's like, everything happens for a reason. And, like, the story does progress. And it's pretty late. It's like, I think, 98 minutes, 100 minutes, something like that.
Yeah,
so,
something
I mean,
like that, yeah.
It's definitely... For some reason, I remember it being shorter, but I...
Well, it seems to go by pretty quickly.
Yeah,
like
it's paced
said,
very well.
It's a solid, easy hour and a half.
Yeah.
It's just one of those... To me, what I found so effective about it, like you said, in the scene where there was no dialogue, they were just boarding up the house.
Yeah.
To me, I was like, yeah, make sure you get that part right there, because that's going to be very, very important. Like, everything, it actually, like... You understand everything you actually need to know about these characters. And, you know, honestly, what's happening out there is actually more prevalent than what's happening with these characters.
Because
you don't, you never really find out who Ben is. You never find out. Honestly, it doesn't actually even particularly matter.
No, it doesn't.
Because you know enough about Ben based upon what you're shown about Ben.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's a guy who... You wind up rooting for because he's the one who's trying to make it.
Yeah.
And he has to do hard things that other people, that, you know, when he shot Cooper finally.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, I don't really want to do this. But you've left me, how many times? You're going to try to kill me. You're going to try to kill me, and you got to go.
Yeah. His wife didn't put up any fight either.
His wife
was like, I wish you got it.
Yeah.
I should have thought of that sooner.
Yep. She's like, okay, him.
Yeah.
So it winds up being this thing. It's like, okay, cool. Like, you don't... And that's a part of what makes these characters actually so compelling.
Yeah.
You know? So
in the scene with boarding up the house, I just kept thinking, like, where do they keep finding all this wood? But they did use doors, too.
Yeah, they used doors, everything.
Broke down cabinets, if I remember right. Yeah, just all kinds of stuff.
Well, it was like he pulled the bottom of a cabinet, but then he just, like, put his hand in, and there's just more wood. And I was just like, who just stores wood?
I think they got a fireplace.
Yeah, that's they had a true. Fireplace, too. I mean, I liked how... for the most part, they were thinking on their feet.
Yeah.
They were constantly taking in information about the zombies. Like, knew, okay, fire scares them. You know, fire is a way to get rid of them. Fire scares them. Took them a little bit long. Like, he understood, which is very interesting, he understood when he had the tire iron how you kill them, which is blunt force trauma to the head. When he had the gun, he actually was a little lazier.
That was kind of funny.
He got a little lazy because he's like, oh, I got a gun now. So it's like...
But I think that's also interesting, too, is like... Like, close quarters, it's easy to fucking hit a motherfucker and have a tire iron. A gun, like, I've shot a gun a couple of times, and, like, I mean, it's something... I'm better with a fucking bow and arrow than I am with a gun, because I spent summers working in a summer camp where I taught archery.
Right.
So, like, I got good with a bow and arrow.
Right.
So I could probably pull off a headshot inside of two or three shots with a bow and arrow. A gun, I'm not as good with.
Right.
And I think the average person...
Wouldn't be
is not, like, a marksman. Like, and the head's a much smaller target... Almost anybody could probably make a body shot from the distance they were.
Sure, because you've got more space to work with and everything like that. And also, like, you got to hold up this shotgun and then apply this pressure, and, you know, that's going to be hard for anyone.
Yeah, certainly. You know? One of my friends, KK, who's actually going to be on an upcoming episode when we do Dawn of the Dead for the podcast, she's mentioned on Walking Dead how unrealistic it is that, like, everyone is just picking up headshots left and right.
Yeah.
And it's like, it makes sense for maybe two of the characters because they're law enforcement or they're military.
Yeah.
Like, or they're a hunter or whatever. But like, everybody's like, oh yeah, this dude, I don't know, used to work at the Piggly Wiggly.
Right.
And now, like, he's just lining up headshots.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
what did you used to do? Oh, I used to be a barback at Bodega. Yeah.
Bam, headshot.
Headshot. But now I'm nice with his nine. I'm nice with it, yeah.
Yeah.
I did really appreciate how practical it was.
Yeah, it very much was.
Can we talk about the ending?
Yes.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get to the ending. It's the ending fucking sucks. It's a downer.
Mm-hmm. He was the strong role character.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I connected to him and then it was just like, he's gone.
Yeah.
And it's a huge fucking downer because you're rooting for him.
Yeah.
Like and by that point in the movie, like, he very clearly becomes like the only character who's gonna make it out of this.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then it's not even the fucking zombies that take him out. It's us.
Yeah.
We were the monsters all along.
Right. Yep.
And it becomes very, very interesting to me when I saw that, because you root for him, you wind up understanding he's the only one who should make it out of this.
Right.
Yeah. He is the only one willing to do what it takes to survive.
Yeah.
And his strength makes him very likable.
Absolutely.
And he does everything he has to do, and then eventually he's killed by the sheriff in fucking Western Pennsylvania. Not too typical sounding, honestly. But what I found most interesting about that is that they shoot him, and then from there it just goes to still shots.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you notice in the still shots, they all see that he was a human being. They all see that he was a person. And what they just grab at the knives.
That's the thing, man. Like, when it cuts to the still photographs, it reminds you of, like, photos you see of, like, lynchings and shit.
Yeah.
And it's fucking chilling.
It takes you right there because...
It becomes a completely different kind of terrifying.
You look at the faces of these men. There is no remorse. It's not like, or like this or anything.
They're just like, all right, well,
it's like, okay, well, you know, at least it was a black that we got.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Whatever, we went and killed ourselves a nigger. Doesn't particularly matter too much. They pulled out the meat hooks. They said, let's kill him again so he doesn't have a chance to...
Didn't even carry him. Meat hooked him.
Yeah.
So, and that's why I say that former Black Panther leader in Chicago, Fred Hampton, COINTELPRO, the FBI, basically what they went and did is they kind of infiltrated the Black Panther Party for self-defense and the Chicago Police Department ransacked his house in the middle of the night while he was sleeping and killed him and a bunch of other of the Black Panthers.
Yeah.
And it was covered up for a long time. The FBI now freely admits it. Yeah, we did that. And we had no jurisdiction to do that. The police did that. No one's ever gone to jail for it. No one's ever done a day of jail time for it. But I remember seeing the still shots.
Uh-huh.
The still shots of everything, and it was very, very chill, because you would just have a dude who was clearly asleep, just dead, and there were these guys sort of standing over him, you know?
Like, yep, this is
the order of the day, and it sort of, again, leads into, you look at the assassination of a Martin Luther King Jr., look at the assassination of a Malcolm X, it's like, okay, well, that's business as usual. You know, this is kind of like, we're back to it. And in that moment, it was like, yeah, good, but not good enough. Because at the end of the day, you had a pigment that just meant you were not going to make it out of this situation.
Yeah. And that, I think horror movies, zombie movies in particular, are effective when the focus isn't, hey, zombies are in this.
Yeah.
The focus of it has to be is like, how does something like this affect people?
Yes. How do we interact with one another, really?
And the best zombie movies have, like, human conflict as a result. Because, like, ultimately, it's a commentary on human nature.
Yeah.
And especially in the Romero films.
Sure.
And every now and then you'll see movies like... I think we're still in kind of a zombie... I don't even want to call it a renaissance, because that would imply that everything coming out
right.
is good.
it's a
zombie... We're, like, at a critical mass for throwing zombies and things. There was, like, a period where it's, like, on Netflix, like, every movie was like, oh, let's drop zombies into a Western. I was like, why?
Yeah.
Like, and I watched a couple of them. I was like, this make like...
No sense. If you watch the Sci-Fi Channel, man, there's nothing but zombies, and most of it is garbage.
Yeah, and, like, it's not saying anything. It's not, like...
It was just
it's not doing anything unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like Shaun of the Dead. A movie like Shaun of the Dead is fucking great.
Yeah.
Because there are zombies in it, but that entire movie
is
about this dude being like stuck in a fucking state of arrested development and learning how to fucking like mature and like take charge of his fucking life. And there just happen to be zombies in it.
Yeah.
Like the Romero movies are like, hey, here's this group of survivors who can't even fucking learn to band together and get along with each other in the face of like the end of the world.
Sure.
And I think that's really powerful, and that's very important, and it's an unfortunately very accurate commentary on us.
On us.
Like, that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
Like, it would turn into a fucking pissing match.
Well, because at the end of the day, it's like, you could be staring down into the scope of oblivion. You could be looking oblivion in the face. And we would be sitting there arguing about wherever we come from or whatever we do. You look at any good horror film. You look at any good natural disaster film. You look at any good, like, alien invasion type of film. The invasion, the disaster, the horror, the zombies, they become secondary to how we actually deal with one another, because we are a big part of our undoing in these stories.
Exactly, yeah.
We are the major part of our undoing in the stories where it's like we survive them is like we have to sort of come together.
Mm-hmm.
The ones where we don't come together, everyone dies.
Yep.
Night of the Living Dead, prime example.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we do the stories where we just cannot come together, everyone dies. I bet you $100 had one of those girls made it, and it had been her that came through the window, that shot wouldn't have immediately been fired.
No, definitely not.
You know what I'm saying? Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Because that meant that not only would she not have been killed, then Ben wouldn't have been killed.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. But...
Well, because it was a black dude.
Yeah.
You were going to say something like...
Oh, yeah. Completely different area, but I watch a lot of doomsday prepper shows and also, like, documentaries and stuff. And I think in a documentary or some article that I was reading about, like, doomsday preppers and zombie movies and everything and the rise of zombie culture, they were making the point that, like, everybody's feeling like the world is in more of a crisis now than it previously has been, and so they're all worried about, like, the end of the world, so then that gives rise to movies like zombie...
Yeah, certainly.
Films. So, because you were saying that they just throw zombies into everything nowadays, and it's like, it's getting on the mindset of surviving in, like, a dystopia type of world, or a world where things come to get you. But, where am I going with this? But yeah, it's weird that I think it's weird that in every type of movie that I've seen like this, at least one like quote unquote human makes it out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Ben obviously didn't make it out. Nobody in the house made it out, but all the TV news reporters. Mm-hmm. Yep. And like the sheriff's department.
And his unofficial deputies, his posse.
Yeah, like human people still make it out. It's not. I think it harkens to like people's, like how you're talking about earlier, people's instinct to survive.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Well, we always like to flirt with our annihilation. We don't really want to go there. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like we love to flirt with the idea of our annihilation. Because look at.
If you want to dance on that, we just don't want to pay the tab.
We don't want to pay the tab, yeah. Right. Like, we like to skip out of the bar before it closes. But yeah. But you're absolutely right. Like, because of the fact that we're in this hysteria of, you know, zombie culture or whatever, or horror culture, pandemic culture, disease culture, whatever the case may be, with Ebola and all this other stuff, now we're always thinking, oh, what's going to be the thing? What's going to get us out of here? Which is very interesting. If you were to go back now, 30 to 20 years ago, the Cold War was that same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cold War was that same thing. You had Red Dawn, you know, films like that. Yep. You had The Watchmen, which the book was made, you know, in that era because of that. Even things like, you know, V for Vendetta were speaking towards a you know, either the end or totalitarianism, you know. So, we like that shit. Like, with technology built up the way it is, and all of a sudden we're getting computers everywhere. Oh, Terminator now.
Yep.
And, you know, like, all that.
Do either of you know of any zombie or, like, apocalypse type of movie where, like, all the humans are taken out and, like, nobody survives?
Man.
Because I just think it's really...
I would say...
I mean, like, I totally feel that all the, like, race issues and everything are super important, but I feel like we've touched on that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm trying to think. And then, I can think of movies that come close to that.
I would say the remake comes close, because the remake sort of, to me, shows zombies everywhere, you can't get away from this, it is inevitable.
Yeah.
Like, it's inevitable.
Yeah. Walking Dead, like, at least like the comic, its creation was meant to be essentially to look at a world like that, because these movies are just glimpses of that.
Yeah.
At least in the comics, I think like 5 or 6 years have passed, like where the comics currently are now. And Robert Kirkman, the creator, like his whole point was like, you see what happens like at the onset of an outbreak, but like, what is it like to live in a world where this is just the world?
This is the world.
Right.
So I think the Walking Dead comics are very interesting, and they thrive on like the majority of the conflict is the human element.
Yeah.
I would say as far as like apocalyptic movies, Cabin in the Woods kind of does, but like it's a real tease because like it basically ends with like the old gods rising and taking over, but like you don't get a glimpse beyond that.
Okay.
But yeah, it certainly would be interesting if that like there's like what no more humans.
Right. Yeah.
Again, we love to flirt.
I know we love to flirt, but yeah, I've been like. Looking more into zombie culture and stuff, I think it's like weird that culturally it seems like all the elements of zombies are typically the same.
Oh yeah,
like they're all out to get brains. They all look kind of gross.
Yeah.
Well, and you actually bring up a really really interesting and provocative question and point. These zombie culture kind of has to, it thrives because there are humans that are not zombies yet. You get rid of the humans, what actually then happens to zombie culture? You'd have like what would writing a zombie piece, a zombie film, zombie whatever with no people, what would that actually be? Would that then be just the eradication of everything, period? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like would that, and then would it, would like what would happen? That would be very very interesting. Would mother nature have to create a natural disaster to get rid of everything and start again?
I don't know. There is one film that is extremely poorly done, but it takes the perspective of the people that are changing into zombies, and then it follows it'll cut to what that the humans see and then cut back to what the zombies are thinking, which I think that's the only film that I've seen.
Is that about Warm Bodies?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Warm Bodies. Yeah, I remember Warm Bodies.
Yeah.
I kind of like it. Was, to me, it was like it was a romance comedy, which I thought was weird. Yeah. But they pulled it off. I was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
It's not.
I wish it got
it's
like.
It's awful. But.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not very good. But, like, yeah, certainly, like. But again, like, for taking a different tack, like, pretty much there's two purposes in a zombie. Like, almost every zombie text. It's either survival. Or trying to cure,
yes,
whatever disease or whatever has caused it,
right?
And Warm Bodies then falls into that and is like, all right, you had a chance to do something interesting and give us a different perspective, and you shot your wad on it.
Well,
but,
and I think probably that's what makes Walking Dead so interesting is that like you just it starts off here are the zombies, you get a little bit of an explanation in the show, not so much in the book. And it's just like, no, there is no science to be done on this now.
Yeah.
We're past that point. Like, this is literally, you read the comic book of The Walking Dead, and it's like, this thing is inevitable. Like, it's just, they're going to win out. Like, it just appears that they're just going to win. You know what I'm saying? Like, so.
But yeah, sorry to take a lighter
spin. No, that's fine.
That's a good spin to take.
That's fine. I think that's a good point for us to wrap up and round this out. So let's do favorite moments. Satoru, start with you.
Honestly, I would say realistically, my favorite moment was the end, the stills.
Okay.
I felt that was sort of the most powerful point, and that I think really encapsulated a lot about what this film was.
Yeah.
Especially for that time, because Night of the Living Dead, the original, is a period piece.
Certainly.
You know, so it really encapsulates that perfectly.
The time that it
to the sheriff's department, Ben is just as much of a zombie, a flesh eater as the zombies that are. He's no different. He's subhuman.
Absolutely.
Just the same. So that was actually because I'm like, ooh, he did it. Romero did it. Didn't back away from it. And there it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice. Laura?
I think I would have a couple.
Okay.
The stills were really powerful.
Yeah.
And then also when they just the Tommy and Judy just deserted Ben at the gas pump.
Yeah.
But then it was kind of funny that then they kind of in a way karma came back on them and they exploded.
Well, they didn't necessarily desert him. They were trying to get like they even said like we have to get the truck away from the pump.
Yeah.
So like he was trying to like
I think that obviously they weren't communicating, which again goes back to like they just shoot themselves in the foot by like not communicating.
Certainly.
And then I also thought that I guess I'm going in reverse order of importance.
Oh, that's fine.
I was very surprised when they did the scenes for the news where they cut to where it was on the TV.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember seeing that in movies in that kind of time period.
Yeah.
That was huge.
Yeah,
that was
pretty
cool. Huge.
For me, I think it's Ben's monologue about the diner.
Yeah.
Because, like, every time I hear it, like just how, like, really, and Ben is... Dwayne Whitaker, definitely the best actor in this movie.
His acting holds it together.
Yeah.
Certainly.
He's
and
the classically
so,
trained
like,
one.
Like, when Ben is doing that monologue about Beekman's Diner, about the zombies when he first encounters them, like, every time I watch it, like, I try and picture my brain, I was like, what if they had the budget to do this? I'm like, I think it would have been less effective if they'd actually shown it. Like, I think it works so much better with Ben just sitting in this farmhouse just telling Barbara that story. And I think it's really great.
Yeah, I don't think it's important to the plot to see him in
certainly.
The diner.
And you would have, and honestly, like you said, if they had the budget to do it, it wouldn't have come out.
No.
Oh, yeah.
For that time period, it would have been too much. But you in your head can piece it together
just
fine.
Yeah,
and
it,
I did.
It paints a very vivid picture.
When he did that monologue, I saw it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I saw everything. Cool.
Yeah, cool. All right, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you, Satoyo and Lauren, for coming on doing Night of the Living Dead. And thank you guys for listening. And, I should have said this at the top of the show. Night of the Living Dead is available on Netflix currently. You can probably even still watch the whole thing on YouTube. It's in the public domain due to not being properly registered for the copyright. Registered as Night of Anubis, which is not what they ended up calling this movie. So, thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to How Have You Not Seen This. If you enjoyed the podcast, like the page on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also leave us a rating or a review. If you're interested in donating to the podcast, you can do so through the PayPal link at the Podomatic website, howhaveyounotseenthis.podomatic.com. You can also send any questions, comments for the show to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.